What's up, everybody?
Howdy ho, friends.
How you doing this week? Hope you're doing swell. yeah, we're back with another episode of Living Life Intently. I'm Lee Frazier.
I'm Jonathan Canary.
Yeah, we're here hanging out, talking to some rad people. And I just want to say thank you to everybody who has listened to this podcast and given feedback over the last couple of weeks from us starting this kind of new format out. I've gotten a lot of positive feedback, mostly to say that it sounds more organized.
You're welcome.
That super producer there, Jonathan Canary. Yeah, I just want to say that we've launched our hiking program for the summer. So if you have any interest in doing some guided hikes, we've got more kind of special event guided hike stuff coming out soon. I am also trying to wrap up our event schedule for the summer. As always, we have our season opener on July 1st. That should be announced in the next month or so. And we've got, I'm hoping to announce the Garrett Mason dates later in the summer as well. But we're trying to get the event schedule up before people start really booking and looking into summer adventures around Cape Breton Island. Other than that, we have our preseason sale on our campground for our glamping tents and all experience packages. But that's that for now.
Who do we have in the pod today?
We have Mr. Nighttime Pod,
Jordan Bonaparte.
Yeah. Bonaparte. It's Bonaparte. Yeah.
Right?
Sorry, he corrected me. Yeah, we had fun. We talked. This one's a little different. It's not adventure. We went off the rails for a brief minute telling stories, swapping weird stories of Cape Breton Island.
But you know, it's exciting to it's really exciting to meet up with some folks from home that are doing some really exciting things. And yeah, so listening to his pod and him having I'm doing you now. Yeah, it's really exciting to talk to some folks from home and just see that they're doing exciting things. And he does some really cool stuff with the Nighttime Podcast and YouTube. And yeah.
Yeah, and we'll just jump into it. But at Live Life Intense and all social channels. Hope you like this podcast, and we'll be back next week with somebody. I do not know who, but it'll be somebody. Anyways, peace. So we are in Halifax. This is a new episode of Living Life Intently. We're here with Jordan Bonaparte. I got it that time, right?
You got it.
Oh,
and,
buddy.
And let's clarify. People call this Halifax. This is beautiful Clayton Park. This is like a diamond in the rough of Halifax.
Hey, when you're from Cape Breton, it's all Halifax.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Anywhere south of Truro is Halifax.
We're somewhere on the mainland.
Sorry, Haligonians. Bedfordonians? What's the Bedford people? I don't know. Whatever.
We don't talk about them.
Okay.
Those who shouldn't. Parts unknown.
Hey, I used to live right down for about 6 years, just not far from where we're at right now. It was great. I moved from downtown Halifax out into Bedford, and it was like, it's amazing.
Yeah. Great drive to Halifax.
So Jordan, you're just around the corner here.
Oh yeah. This is like literally I'm for people listening who weren't here when I showed up, I was late because I assumed you weren't, you know, a block from my house. I was driving towards downtown being like, they're down here somewhere.
No. Tell us what you do.
I'm a busy guy, but most of my attention goes towards creating my podcast, the Nighttime Podcast. Mm-hmm. But a lot of my time also goes towards raising a kid. So I have two children and I'm involved in everything. I'm like, I never stop. I'm one of those people. I think, I don't watch a lot of TV, and I think that's the difference. Mm. Everyone tells me about TV shows. I don't watch TV, but I'm involved in a billion things that I think I could watch TV instead of. Mm-hmm. That's how I do it. But, anyway, I'm the host and creator of the Nighttime Podcast, which is a podcast, of course, that you would get on all the podcast places, but I also do a lot of like live streaming, so it's kind of like half YouTube, half podcast now.
Yep.
So
And when did you start this podcast?
I was one of the early adopters, I guess. This is my seventh year, which 2015, I guess. Yeah, I started like 2015, and I think at the time that I started, I was like the first Canadian podcast that covered crime. And I think I was also the first Canadian podcast that like actually identified as a Canadian podcast.
Yeah.
There were other Canadians, but they weren't like Canadian coverage.
Yeah.
So when I started, it was right before like if you're into crime podcasts, kind of what had happened was there was an American one back in the day called Serial. And when that came out, it was huge and it led to this kind of boom of other podcasts mm-hmm. kind of copying that style. I started, I think, right before Serial. And so it was like a different scene then. It was still at the time where you would listen to a podcast and in the middle of a podcast, one of the hosts would have to go to the bathroom. So he would just be like, I'm just going to get up and go to the bathroom. You know, like there was that, like it was loose and just way more casual. But then after Serial came out and podcasts started to grow and podcasts started getting ads, you know, it all just changed. And I've just done my best to keep up.
And how's it going?
That's a loaded question because you can go a couple different ways. So as far as the main reason I started, which was as a kind of a creative hobby and a way to explore stories I'm interested in,
yep.
It's going fantastic. I've been able to, like, I'm someone who I've always watched the news and followed interesting things. Thanks to my podcast, I'm able to really, like, get in touch with people involved in those stories and dig deep into them. And it's been fascinating. It's almost like it's allowed, like, the news to be this interactive thing that I can, like, jump right in the middle of. So I love that side of it. As far as the growth and audience and all this stuff, it's gone well. I've been very lucky. Again, being an early adopter, I kind of got a bit of an audience at the beginning that's kind of stuck with me. So as other podcasts start now, they're really trying to break through so much noise that's there and find their people. I kind of got lucky by being early into it that I was already established when everybody jumped in. So I think that's the only thing that's kept me going as far as like downloads and ads and stuff. But yeah, I'd say it's gone awesome. I think podcasting's incredible. It's great to meet people, great to talk to people, and it's a great way to, you know, explore cool things.
Yeah, I found out about your podcast through a friend of mine. When was that? I think about a year ago, maybe.
Okay.
I think he shared it to me. Yeah, so I've been listening since. I've been up on a lot of podcasts recently, but it's too much stuff going on.
Well, what they say is like people like podcasts, so they start a podcast. But once you start a podcast, you can't listen to other podcasts. You don't have time because you're editing your own, or you kind of know how there's a saying, you know, how the bread's baked or something. Yeah, I find, like if I listen to other podcasts, I hear their production stuff and it takes me out of the conversation or whatever. So
you preferred the unpolished.
Yeah, kind of I think so. But
we don't put a lot of work into this. So.
Good.
We're in a kitchen right now. That's what kitchen. Big, little bit of reverb, but you know, away she goes.
Yeah, I just find like just like if say you have a fancy camera on the table here, if you look at other people's photography, you probably see things that kind of just kind of break the attention you would have as a layman looking at a beautiful photo or something.
Yeah, it's like an extra dimension that someone who's in the production of that sees. Yeah.
And I find with podcasts, that's kind of what happens to me. But I like if I'm listening to a new show, I'm immediately kind of hearing what inspired them, and I'm hearing and I'm listening to how they're using music in the background. Yeah. But what I'm not hearing is, you know, the story or the message they're trying to get across. So I think making a podcast kind of screwed me over.
when did you get into true crime?
Forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was, forever ago. I was, so being a kid of like the 80s, Unsolved Mysteries was big inspiration.
Yeah.
So as a kid, I loved Unsolved Mysteries. I loved those books of, you know, horror stories and stuff. Then as I got a little bit older, my dad and I, we would always watch like Cold Case Files, American Justice, and like those kind of crime documentaries before crime documentaries were popular. I've always been interested. And I think I've mentioned this on my show before. I did a series of episodes about the murders at the McDonald's in Sydney River. That happened when I was a kid. And that was for a Cape Bretoner who's like my age. When the McDonald's murders happened, that is almost like if you talk to someone from New York about like 9/11 or something, it's like it was such a kind of defining dark moment that everybody is connected to in some way, tragically. And I think when that happened, that was kind of one of the stories that made me like, or one of the events or experiences that made me really follow crime and kind of the darker side of things. Then years later, Fonce Jessen came out with his book about it, and I read through it like 5 times, you know, and I've always just been interested in it.
And what's the process when you pick a story up like that and you want to follow it? Like, kind of what's your creative process from doing research to developing and producing the podcast?
Yeah, so I'm kind of all over the place, and I have different styles of episodes that have a different process, but generally what will happen with me is I'll be reading the news or talking to somebody and hear of a story that for whatever reason captures my attention. Something about it is unique or unusual or fascinating in some way or important in some way, and it's so natural for me to be like, ooh, that's interesting. And then I get home and I'm on my laptop. I call it the nighttime podcast because so much of this happens at night. My kids are asleep. I'm on my laptop. I'm like, oh, that, I heard about that, you know, a missing persons case from Truro. And I'll start Googling it, seeing what other people wrote, read a few articles. And again, the benefit of having my podcast is at the end of that, I can have some unanswered questions. And I'll think like, you know, tomorrow morning, I'm going to call that guy's father and see if he'll, you know, the missing guy's father and see if he'll talk to me, let's say, as an example. Yep. And that's kind of how the podcast is born or how the episodes are born. But it's the episode is almost like a secondary thing. I usually will get into the story, start researching, digging in, and then for my own personal interest, then I'm like, man, I need to find a way now to record some of this and share it with people. But like, it just as an example, there's something I've been working on for the last like 3 weeks, and I haven't recorded anything, but I've done hours of just, you know, researching and talking to people and meeting people. Now I just need to think of how I can put it together and share it with people.
Wow.
So that's kind of my process. Yeah. I'm like I guess obsessive a bit about if I have a real narrow focus. So if there's some, let's talk music. If I, there's a band I'll discover. Recently, I started getting into Kiss.
Yeah.
I just, for whatever reason in life, I never got into them. So I started getting into Kiss, and it's like, I can't just casually listen. I need to like listen to only that band, and I can't just listen to the music. I need to read like some background on the album and, you know, what made it important and how it fits into their career.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I'll just be like, yeah, I'm done with Kiss. I'll never listen to it again. And that's how I'm like, same way with the stories. I just dig right in and get crazy about it and put it out as an episode and move on to something else.
I guess I'm kind of similar too, because I, you know, there'd be certain things. So for instance, I did the same thing with Motley Crue.
Okay.
So I never listened to Motley Crue ever.
What a shame.
Well, yeah. Well, I grew up doing dance music, electronic music, hip hop, West Coast hip hop. And I was up here in Halifax. I was living here when I was, I think, 19. And this is how Motley Crue, this is a true story. So we were at my friend's house, and he was dating this girl, and they were kind of on the rocks, and she was at this party with a guy that he, I don't know if he thought that they're dating. Anyways, he basically just turned to us one night and he goes, boys, get ready. We're going to scrap. And I was like, what? He goes, get in the car. Let's go. And this might have changed. So we're in Halifax side and we're going to Dartmouth. Gets in his car and he has Kickstart My Heart on repeat, like crank as loud as we go, trying to get us hyped up by the time to go to this party to fight. And and so that kind of started it. And then, you know, over the years.
So wait. Did you fight?
No.
Oh, okay.
There's a whole other story there I won't get into.
But if you had to, that song did it.
Oh, we were fired up. So that kind of reminds me, every time I hear it on the radio, I'm like, oh, you know, I think of that story. And then I'd start looking into Motley Crue. And then there was a book written called The Dirt, which they developed into a TV show. But prior to that, I was in an airport. And this kind of like, I listened to that song and it went a couple of years. And then I saw the book and I started reading the book, waiting for an airplane. I'm like, oh, fuck, these guys are crazy.
Yeah.
So then I started off the deep end. Any book, article, story, YouTube video, it's like weeks of watching it.
That's exactly how I do it. And I find like, or that's exactly how I find myself falling into something like that. But I find, like you mentioned, reading the book, and that getting you into it. I think with music or with art or whatever, getting the background and being able to contextualize what it is so important. So just listening to say Motley Crue's music may get you like, you know, a 5 of interest, but knowing the background and who they were, what they're about, and how they came to be there, that's, you know, what really pumps it up and makes it, you know, drives you in or whatever, draws you in.
And then in the backstories behind like that specifically, that some of the songs that were written and why they were written, like Kickstart My Heart was because I forget what one of the guys ended up taking a heart attack from doing, I think it was too much drugs and OD'd. And then they like shocked him to wake him up. And that's how the song started because they were like revived him. It was like Kickstart My Heart. And that was the start of the song. So yeah.
So like on that topic, so in your research and touching base with these people who, you know, through this network of happenstance, this tragedy happened. Mm-hmm. Do you grow like an attachment to these people?
Oh yeah. I find, unlike, I think a lot of like traditional journalists, big time. Cause the thing about me in the way I do it is we'll go with, the example I'm going to give you is, a series of episodes I did about a missing young woman in Victoria, BC. Her name's Emma Filipov. And this is a series that I did the first year or two that I started, but it's to answer your question, this is the best example is, I watched a episode of Fifth Estate, which is like the CBC documentary series. And they had done an episode about Emma Filipov, a missing young woman. And I, at the end of it, I was just so invested in the case. I thought like, she seems like someone I'd be friends with. I can like relate so much to her life. I need to know everything I can about this. So I started reading any article, listening to anything written about her, and totally, you know, got all the facts of her story. But there was still so much outstanding that I was like, yeah, like I want to learn more, get involved, see what I can do to help in some way. So I reached out to Emma's mom and I was like, we'll start with, I wanted to interview her on my show about Emma's disappearance. So we did that episode. But I found like Emma's mom and I, her name is Shelley, we kind of became like, we were friendly. We worked together and talked together well. So we're like, yeah, let's do another one. And Shelley, Emma's mom, got me in touch with a close friend of Emma's. So I did that episode as an example. Then stuff happened in Shelley's life. She ended up getting arrested and charged with drug trafficking. And so, and she had just been on my show. Yeah. She had just been on my show recently. So she wouldn't talk to the press, but she was, comfortable with me. So she came on my show to kind of address it and give her, you know, a thing. But anyway, as it went on over the course of a year, being kind of friendly with Shelley, it went from Emma's mom. It went from kind of me interviewing her to like really her and I kind of collaborating in how I would tell the story. I went to Ontario and met with her and stuff. And it went way beyond like the relationship like a journalist would have with a subject. Like, you know, we talked about my kids kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So now when anything happens in that story, I'm quick to cover it and provide updates, but it doesn't seem like work. It seems like a story of a tragedy that happened to a friend of mine.
Yeah.
And I can kind of apply that to any number of stories that I've covered. Cause again, it's me typically getting in a car, going to their house and sitting down, and usually we'll go for lunch or coffee before I even interview them just to get to know them and stuff.
Yeah.
And so yeah, it becomes very personal.
That must really give like a satisfaction or like a meaning to doing the work, you know?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. It makes it about, depending on the style of story or the, or whatever, but a lot of times it's about advocacy and helping them share a message in a way that the traditional media wouldn't.
Absolutely. Yeah.
If you're reading about, you know, the victim of a crime or whatnot, if you read it on a CBC article, it's just a short little blurb that's, kind of detached a bit from what's happening and it's just summarizing it. What I can do is go to their house with a microphone in front of them and talk for 2 hours. So it's so much more personal. And again, I know them by that point. So I get how they communicate and I'm able to, you know, help. Then in editing, I can make it more presentable and more impactful.
Is there like a timeline with regards to like how long it's been since a person has been missing or murdered or whatever? Like, do you jump in right away? Mm. Do you wait a while? Are people receptive to you contacting them?
Oh, geez. Yeah, it's a mixed bag. So I'll do historical stuff where I'll do an episode that's kind of like tells the story of something that happened 20 years ago. Like I did one about the murder at the Big Ben's convenience store.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's say that's something that happened when I was a kid. So it was a story I knew. the podcast allowed me to share the story with people who aren't from the area or people from the area that don't know it. But it also, by doing the podcast, gave me an excuse to kind of get court documents and learn about the story in a way you wouldn't by reading the press, as an example. So some of it's older stuff that have happened a while ago. But then I do current stuff as well. Like, I have an ongoing series now where I'm doing weekly episodes covering the mass shootings that started in Portapique, that whole thing. And that's a weekly episode where each episode is really covering the week's developments. So it's completely real time, like breaking news. Yep. And we have even people from within that story leaking documents to us and stuff. Wow. So it's like breaking news kind of current things. So it's two completely different styles of podcast.
Yeah,
but I do both. Yeah, and I don't even really have a preference between them. It's just like
it's all about where the story is.
Yeah, that, and also I think I've done it for like 7 years or something now, and if I did the same style of episodes or even the same topic, I'd be so bored by now, and you guys probably get that. It's like, I just find like mixing it up, it's makes it interesting. That said, though, I'm sure I could find like what style does the best for downloads and just focus on that and maybe do better. But it's I would just be bored.
Well, we were talking before we went rolling here that, you know, we're really enjoying this, where we've kind of taken the podcast to a place where we can talk to people who are doing really interesting things. It's not necessarily exclusive to, you know, the outdoors or whatever, but we try to showcase local artists and entrepreneurs and whatnot. And, you know, we're really enjoying the diversity this season.
Yeah. And I mean, it was kind of like, I mean, it's underneath the Live Life Intense brand, which is like adventure, outdoor, backcountry, camping, that sort of stuff. And that's kind of originally how I thought this podcast was going to go. But after a while, I was like, you know, this is just another arm of stuff that us as a brand company, whatever, have interests in. So why not kind of break off from that? It's the same deal. It's like, I'm always doing things outside. We're doing things, you know, in the summer is our big season. We're doing winter trips, but to have something else to keep it fresh and not just the same regurgitated stuff over and over again, because I'm having, like, I do all of our own marketing, like the Instagram, that sort of stuff. And I find, you're talking like, you know, photographers get really in a slump. Videographers get in a slump. Even you're doing the same thing over. Musicians get in a slump. What's the same? That's why, you know, bands try to change up their sound. However, you know, sometimes that comes with poor cost. Poor feedback from past fans, because that's what they want to hear. But yeah, that's the whole point of doing this thing, is just to have another leg of something that we're interested in, to keep things fresh and share different people's stories, because, you know, it's always interesting. We were just sticking to outdoor stuff. It's like, I follow some of those podcasts and they become really stagnant after a while.
And really become niche too. Like, I find that's one thing, especially early on with my show, that it helped is, The only thread that ties all my episodes together after 7 years is it's all Canadian based stories. Either the people that I'm talking about or the events or the places are all Canadian, but I'll do like one episode that's, again, like a crime.
Yeah.
Then I'll do an episode about a haunted house. Then I'll do an episode about a missing person. Then an episode about an archaeological mystery. And then an episode about UFOs.
I was just going to say UFOs, because heard some of those.
Yeah, then I'll go back to crime. And so it's kind of all over the place. And the way I saw it is kind of like, every episode, if it's set in a different place or of a kind of different genre, you're reaching a different group of people that look for that niche. Some of them, let's say if I do an episode about a UFO sighting in Manitoba, I may get some people who are into UFO stories that don't know my show will listen. And if 100 of them listen, 5 of them may be like, yeah, that was a good show, I'll see what else he does.
Yep.
Then maybe 100 people will listen because it's just about something in Manitoba and they're from Manitoba and there's a podcast covering a Manitoba story. So they listen. Of the 100, maybe 5 will stick with me and see what I do next.
Yep.
So as you kind of roll the ball, you know, in different directions, you're kind of collecting different people you wouldn't if I always covered, you know, UFOs in Manitoba. You know, so it's like with what you're doing, if you stuck with just talking about, you know, the outdoorsy type stuff, you could make that your niche, but you're then like kind of in a vacuum.
Yeah. And I mean, it's, you have a very I guess I know more people doing a million different things in all these different areas of life, like different career paths. And I find that more interesting because a lot of the stuff overlaps and, the pool is just much bigger to pull from here. And there's so many more stories to tell just from people from the East Coast rather than trying to find the next adventure. Cause there's only so many people that are doing crazy things. I mean, there's a lot of people doing wild things here, but,
wild things you can talk about.
And like our Venn diagrams overlap where we're all from Cape Breton.
Yeah.
And we all do a podcast.
Yeah. There you go. That's right. I've been outdoors.
Our Venn diagram is overlapping.
Well, I have some outdoorsy stuff that I've covered. I did an episode about Taylor Mitchell. You know that story?
Yeah.
I did one about her. She died at the, I can't think of the name
Skyline.
Of
Skyline.
Skyline Trail. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's in Cape Breton. That was a brutal story.
I got a story about that. Well, I knew a couple of paramedics that were there, but the next day, so I was dating this girl at the time and, it happened and we had planned to go to Fishing Cove, which is the kind of like a couple trails. It's in the same area in the park. And we decided to go there just for the day. So we're going to go down and hike in, have lunch and then hike out Fishing Cove. And, there used to be two paths in. One was what is now the main trail. It's the only one that's there now, but there was a shorter one more towards Pleasant Bay, which was, you can get in the cove in 30 minutes, but you're going straight down the side of a mountain. Mm. And the trail, it's still like a four wheeler access route. I think the park still uses, but however, we went down there, we had lunch, we left and we're hiking. We get back on the trail and I saw a deer jump across the trail. And so my girlfriend, she didn't see it. So I'm like, oh, well, the deer was right ahead of us, whatever. So we ran this trail kind of zigzags, switchbacks all the way up this mountain. And every turn I'd see the deer, we'd just be following this deer up this trail and she kept missing it. And then we got about halfway up the mountain and she goes, do you hear that? And I had this weird feeling. And, I go, no, yeah, I kind of hear something. And I saw the deer jump across and I go, oh, there goes it again. And she goes, oh, I missed it again. And then I was down getting like a water bottle or something. And she goes, oh, there was something else jumped across the trail. I'm like, what, really? Two deer? I'm like, oh shit, crazy. And then not 2 seconds later, a pack of coyotes went off all around us. And we knew that this had happened and they were out trying to hunt these coyotes to try to find them. And it was just like panic. And I describe it as like, it was like when you corner a chicken in a corner and it freaks out and just takes off running. Well, she went, instead of going up the trail, went straight through the woods, straight up the mountain. And I'm there with a fork and knife in my hand. Like literally I had no knife on me. I had a butter knife and a fork.
But did you have Motley Crue blasting?
in my mind. But we got up the mountain and so we got up to the car and we ran up the top of the mountain, got to the vehicle. And I was like immediate, both of us puking, just like puking. Yeah. And we're like, adrenaline. Oh my God, that was crazy. That was crazy.
Yeah. Oh, they freaked me out, those animals. And then after hearing that story, for people who are listening that don't know, she was a young woman who went for a walk on the trail and was attacked and killed by a pack of coyotes that were killed after they ended up finding the coyotes, I think.
I don't know how you can know which one it was. It's not like they have like trophies with them.
No, but I think the autopsy of the animal confirmed she had fed them. And that's why they attacked her. Right.
Interesting.
But they did in fact find the coyotes that did it because they found like parts of her clothes.
Okay. I got it. Yeah.
Oh, wow. It's freaky. That's a freaky story.
But, I know. And she was
not to freak anybody out who's going out hiking on the weekend, but like just don't feed the animals.
And she was alone. That was another thing. And I can't, the idea of, and she, like a young woman, like a, whether it's a young woman or a young man, going on a hike alone in the, without people knowing where you are and stuff just seems like a bad idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Yeah. So you mentioned McDonald's murders.
Yeah.
Big Ben's. Uh-huh. Any other favorites?
Oh, jeez. I have so many favorites. With you guys from Cape Breton, this would be in my favorites, probably in my top 10, is I did a two-part series about Chicky McPhee.
Oh, yeah.
That's the guy.
I did listen to that.
Yeah. So Chicky, when I was a kid, it was, so he was, His name is Chickie McPhee. He was a guy that became famous around Sydney for just literally getting bombed drunk and doing karaoke.
Yeah.
And he gained such a following. He always did the song Wild Thing. Sometimes he'd do Yellow Submarine. But generally he was known for Wild Thing. And he became so famous around Sydney. He was almost like a Frankie McDonald type back in the day. But they would, TV cameras would go to where the karaoke was if he was expected to be there, and they'd broadcast it on TV. And I remember my dad and his buddies, I was probably like 8 years old. They kept me up on like a Saturday night or something because they knew Chickie was going to perform. So I remember my brother and I were just like sitting up all night waiting while my dad and his friends are drinking. And then the guy gets up on stage and he's this like little skinny guy with a hat on. He has a shirt on that says "I love Chickie," and you can't even make out his voice. Just like Wild Thing, and it's like everyone's freaking out, clapping in the audience. But I did. Sadly, Chickie passed away a few years ago. I interviewed his brother, I think. Yeah, his brother and one of his best friends, kind of about like his life. And I think, I love that story because like the story of Chickie McPhee and the clips and stuff. I found a lot of clips and videos of him that I was able to use. The story's awesome, but it's also just like a story like that, I think, only exists in Cape Breton in the late 80s, early 90s. And like when I air that on my show, people are listening from all over the world. And so they just get this little like taste of how wild and crazy and weird it gets, you know, like around here. But I love that story. That was one of my favorite ones. And I think like I said, at the time they were selling shirts for him. It just said "I Heart Chickie." People, my dad had one. They were all over the place. But
wow! I'd like to see one of those shirts, get one of those shirts.
You know, I don't know if you remember this. There was a bar in New Waterford called Jack Duggan's.
Oh, are you going to talk about Survivor?
No, what?
Oh, I've been there 100 times.
What?
Do you know what Survivor was?
No.
Okay, tell me your Duggan story, and I'll tell you the crazy one.
Just that when I was younger, my uncle would put it on, they would broadcast from there and put it on community access.
And what were they broadcasting? Karaoke?
Karaoke.
Okay.
But it would get crazy. Like women taking off their bras and like just really crazy drunk people. And I have like a few flash memories of it.
Yeah.
But when I watched the Chickie, that's what it reminds me of. You know?
So Jack Duggan's, the same bar you're talking about. When I just turned 19-ish, maybe 20, 22, like that age range, so we would have been talking 20 years ago or so, Jack Duggan's did this thing called Survivor. And what it was it was almost like a talent show where you would go on stage and do whatever your talent is, whatever would get the audience to go nuts. And at the end of the night, they would pick a winner and the winner would get something. And then after, say, like 6 weeks or something, they would get the six prior winners on stage and they could win big money. Like, I don't know what it was. It was like enough to make you go nuts, maybe 10 grand or 5 grand or something.
Yeah.
And anyway, Survivor,
which is wealth.
Oh, big money in New Waterford. Yeah. So hopefully children don't listen to your podcast, but the night I went, it was, the prior winners were doing like the championship. Mm-hmm. So I had a friend from New Waterford, Craig Martell, shout out Craig.
Yeah.
And Craig invited me to his house and he's like, "You can spend the night here. We're going to go to Survivor. It's the craziest place." So we went and, we're all just at the back of the room and the event starts, and the first person to get up was this old man, and all he did pretty much, they put a spotlight on him and he stripped down completely naked and put his private parts like in a cup. And everyone is like clapping and cheering, and then he leaves the stage and I'm like, this is nuts. Then there was like someone who did like a breakdance routine, but then the final person, and here's where it gets crazy, and this is like true New Waterford, the final person was this like an attractive woman, young woman, got on stage and danced to Pony by Ginuwine.
Yeah.
And just did like a strip routine.
Yep.
So it was like straight up like strip club atmosphere at this point. She stripped completely naked and danced around. Like there was no pole, but she was kind of imitating that sort of thing. Yep. Everyone went crazy, clapping and whatever. The event ends.
Yep.
And when it's time to choose the winner, she's the one who won. And so she gets, you know, she goes up on stage and gets the money. But while she's on stage collecting the money, people in the audience start freaking out because she shouldn't have won because she's underage and she shouldn't have been in the bar.
Oh my God.
I was at the bar. We're at the back and like you could hear it. It was like a fight didn't break out, but they were screaming, like didn't want her to get the money. They thought the man who put his private part in the cup should have won because she shouldn't even be in the bar. And anyway, I'm just like, what kind of place is this? And they ended up not giving her the money and kicked her out.
Chaos.
Oh my God.
So anyway, that's New Waterford.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
I may want to cut that.
No, but stay in.
I'll tell you, if you start talking about stories about Cape Breton, it's going to get to that. In fact, just one other.
Oh, give it. One give other us one. The stories.
So I do this thing often in the morning where this is something that happened yesterday. I do this thing in the morning. I'll get up and I pour a coffee and I'll play guitar just to kind of wake myself up. And I will often live stream it on Instagram. You know, like
I've watched.
Okay, yeah. Yep. So yesterday I have my phone there. I'm playing guitar and just talking to people on Instagram. And someone writes like, do you know the story of the crazy Malky Woodland show?
Oh my God.
So I don't know if you guys know what this is, but it's like a... Anyway, someone says that, and I'm like, I don't know the story of Malky Woodland, but I know of Malky Woodland because when I was 12, like when I first tried pot, my drug dealer was this man named Malky Woodland, and they're like, it's the same guy as a YouTube channel. Anyway, it's like so the coincidence of like that question was kind of nuts. But then I went online, and sure enough, he's like an old man now, and he has a YouTube channel out of New Waterford, yeah. I think, where he's just ranting and raving
and. Like he could be a WWE wrestler.
Oh, in real life. Yeah, like, yeah,
totally. Well, there's a great episode of that where I don't know what he did, but the police show up and arrest him while he's live streaming.
Oh my goodness.
And it's like, it's actually brilliant.
I gotta
They're
find
putting
that.
Him in cuffs and he's talking to the camera.
when they asked me about it, I didn't know he was YouTubing. I hadn't heard his name in years. But when I was like 12 or 13, he had an apartment near my house. And that's where everyone in the neighborhood was buying pot from him. But like the first time I was in his house to buy pot... his place got raided. While we were there, someone's banging on the door and he was like, don't answer it. They need a warrant. And you can hear from behind the door, like, we got a warrant. And I'm like 13 on the couch, like I'm going to jail. And he's like screaming through the door. And me and like another friend are just like want to get out of there. Not involved at all. Then all of a sudden the door gets booted down. He gets arrested. Whoa. And they let us leave. But anyway, that's the only time I've ever seen him until yesterday when I found out he had a YouTube channel.
Oh, there's a deep dive to be had on YouTube. Channel,
I'm sure that's coming on my show. I'm going to try to get an interview with him or something.
Oh, he'll do one for
sure. Will. Yeah.
Yeah.
Will you guys go do it for me? I don't want to see this guy.
100%. Yeah, we'll go and record it and you can Zoom him.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Wow.
Yeah, Cape Breton's a special place and I love it. And I think with my show, I try to find like the stories that we know about the crazy stuff that happened. I try to find those all around because they're there. It's just you don't hear about them unless you have insiders, like people like that are from that area. You would never, like Googling, you would never find out about Chicky or Malky Woodland or Survivor Nights at Jack Duggan's. But if you talk to people from the area, that's the stories.
I'll give you a few off air.
Okay, good. Yeah.
There was a few in, when we were growing up, there was the shootouts in Bay St. Lawrence where they blocked the road with the burning car.
Right. Uh-huh.
And then there was a guy probably in the 70s. It's a story I was told when I was growing up and, he was arrested, put in prison in Sydney, escaped and got back to Margaree. That was running around between the communities and people were feet. So they were hunting for him with dogs and all that shit, but he was like evading the police forever. They had helicopters looking for him and all this sort of shit. And people were feeding him because they knew him and would leave food outside and that sort of stuff. And then he just kind of disappeared and then ended up turning himself in Ontario or something or west and then went back to prison. Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. So it's like shit like that happened and like all kinds of stuff, crazy stuff when we were growing up.
What a world.
Man. And it used to be a weird, like in when we used to grow up, too. I remember seeing like the you'd be nothing be at an intersection and all of a sudden there's cops at every major intersection on the Cabot Trail through Margaree and stuff, and then SUVs heading towards Shetty Camp and drug busts and all kinds of crazy
shit. I'll tell you a crazy one that's pretty relevant right now.
All right.
So So 3 years ago now, I spent a couple of days in jail.
Okay.
And,
as we all should.
Yeah. Well, on drug charges, I've come out of it pretty good, but, at the Cape Breton Correctional Facility, there's this guy and, he's like looking through the window at the end of our range. Okay. And I had got along well with the four or five other guys that were on the range. They were really nice. And
range is like your block?
Range is like the block, yeah. Right? And there's so many, I don't know how to say this, so I'll just say it. There's so many, like, pedophiles and rats and things like that, that the what do they call it? The
isolation?
No, protective custody or whatever is the main ward.
Okay.
And then all the protective custody wards are like the, so like general population.
Okay. Yeah.
General population ranges became protective custody range.
Okay.
Because there's so many people in protective custody there.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the protective custody ranges became general pop.
Okay.
So there's only like five guys on my range and we each had our own cell.
Yeah.
Which, you know, was pretty good for the 2 days the 30 hours I had to spend there. It was pretty nice to have like a little bit of
sane people, some sane people that weren't pedophiles.
But at the end of the range, there's a window that looks out into the main hall and there's this guy and he looks all crazy and he's got this big scar down his face and he's looking in through the window and I said, guys, like, who's this? And they popped up and they went to the end of the range and they're talking to this guy. They said, this guy's name's Steve Skinner. Okay. And I'm like, okay. So, we get to chat about this Steve Skinner guy, murderer from Halifax.
Yeah. I recognize the name.
I think I know what he did, but I don't want to say because I might misspeak. Yeah. And he fled to, I believe, Venezuela.
Oh, yes. This guy. Yo, he's a scary, bad dude.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
So, apparently, he runs the inmates, right, at the time. So, he is, like, boss of all of the inmates in there because he's, like, the craziest guy. So, when he first got arrested on something, he... they let him out on bail. So let's say it was drug charges. Then he murders someone, gets on a plane, flies to Venezuela. Okay. Starts a drug cartel in Venezuela, murders these American tourists. Uh-huh. And now Interpol's been looking for him for this murder in Halifax or Dartmouth or something. And he murders these American tourists, gives up his location, like that's they know that he did this, right? By his description, because he's got this big, he's scary looking dude. And so the Venezuelan government made I could be getting some of this wrong, don't quote me on this, you'd have to look into it to get the specifics, but the Venezuelan government made this deal that they would send him back to Canada if we took two of their cartel members that they were holding in prison to keep them safe. Wow. So when I was out there, this Steve Skinner guy was running the prison and his two like deputies in running the prison were these two Venezuelan cartel leaders.
Wow.
Isn't that random?
Yeah. Prison doesn't sound fun.
What? Hey, listen, the guys were nice. Everybody
they sound like great guys. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I didn't have to deal with those guys. They're on another range. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
So the guys that I was there with were there on drug charges and their life was in as big of a shithole as mine, right?
Are these drug charges that wouldn't be illegal today? Like I know. Okay.
No.
Just when you hear drug charges,
12 of them would still be illegal.
They would still be bad. Okay. Yeah. All right. Cool.
Well, there we go. We went down that rabbit hole.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's just crazy. Like sometimes how those stories play out over like such vast distances and such vast time. And like,
oh, yeah. And they'll have tentacles that reach all different directions. I find that all the time. I'll cover a story and next thing I know I'm trying to get a hold of someone who lives in another part of the world that's vaguely related in
totally.
Some way. But yeah, it's interesting.
But what, I mean, back to your podcast, like what's coming down the pipeline that you're excited about? Can you Can you leak a little bit?
Oh, definitely.
Okay, there we go.
So, and it's not so much specific stories. It's kind of what I'm trying to do. Like, one of my big inspirations is this radio show that I listen to all the time that's called Coast to Coast. It was big in like the 90s into the early 2000s, and then it stopped. And it was hosted by this guy named Art Bell. And he aired for like, say, 5-hour episodes, and he aired like 7 nights a week, and it was an overnight thing. Wow. But the way Coast to Coast worked is it was just him in his basement with his radio set up, and he would talk to anybody about anything, but it generally was darker stuff. It could be paranormal, conspiracy-minded stuff. And he was getting a lot of people would, since it was the 90s, they couldn't email. They'd either like call, or he had a fax machine, so people were faxing him while he's on air, and he'd be reading from the fax. But his show, it was just amazing to listen to because he had an open mind. He could talk to anybody, and it's just amazing stuff. But anyway, I always try to, like, I think of his show and Coast to Coast and the way that works, and I try to incorporate it into what I've been doing. But the issue I always had is my stuff is pre-recorded and then released, so it didn't allow that real-time interaction. So I've been looking for ways to overcome that. Mm-hmm. And so what I started doing last year, in 2021, was doing most of my interviews. I would live stream them as I was doing the interview, so that way people could ask questions in the chat and whatever. And that kind of made it feel a bit more like a live show. But this year in 2022, my plan is to ramp that up even further. So what I've been doing now is I have two nights that are like scheduled live recordings that have a theme. On Sunday nights at 9:15 Atlantic time, I partner with Paul Palango, who's an investigative journalist and an author, and we do our weekly, like, kind of roundup of what's been going on related to the Nova Scotia mass shootings in Portapique.
Okay.
So that's like a night. And as we do our recording, people, we live stream it. People, I have a separate phone where people can call in and ask questions or give feedback in real time. And then the audio for it's released as a podcast a couple days later. Then every Tuesday night, at 9:15 Atlantic, I do a live a series called Keep Canada Weird. Ooh. Which is specifically a roundup of weird news. So we take my co-host Aaron Corbett and I, we look at, we just, as we see something odd in the news or notable or interesting in some way, we just kind of sit it aside. And every Tuesday night, we do the roundup of the weekly weird news. People can call in and react and whatever. So there's that. What I'm planning to do now is add a third night that will be, I haven't said the theme yet, but I'm still kind of debating what it's going to be. Uh-huh. But I'm hoping to have three nights a week that are these kind of live shows that are released as podcasts. And then separate to that, one episode that's my traditional style of like documentary style.
Yeah.
So right now it's more so my focus isn't so much on like the specific stories that I'm doing, but it's more getting my show set up to kind of take more on of this format going through, you know, going into the year.
So, and where do you do the live streams?
It's all on YouTube. So, yeah.
Is it for anybody to access, or is it through like, yeah, Patreon?
Oh, stuff? Wide open. It's like, I'm on YouTube just as Nighttime Podcast, and all my old episodes are on there. Yeah. And you can watch the live streams, get in on the chat and stuff. And it gets quite wild. And then I do after shows too. So if I'm doing my live stream about whatever, when it ends, I stay there and people can call in and chat and kind of, I call it open lines. So I'll just have my phone open and people can call and chat about whatever.
Cool.
And we get some wild stuff. In fact, two weeks ago I had a lady called after my live stream, and she believes, she was really upset, distraught, kind of crying, panicky. She believes that there's like a satanic cult within the government and the police within Nova Scotia that are out to do her harm. And she claims that they took her daughter due to a Satanist that are within the CPS, like Child Protective Services.
Yeah.
So we talked for a while, and it was wild and very easy to roll your eyes at. But some of what she said was pretty fascinating. And then after I aired that, I checked my mail just a couple of days ago. Like, I have a PO box for my podcast. Mm-hmm. And I had letters from somebody who had very similar stories. So that's kind of becoming this ongoing,
whoa,
thing. Just as an example of how weird it can get.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, it gets really weird. But it's, I like the, you could probably can relate to this, but when you make a podcast, It's, you know, three of us at a table with our microphones. You release it to however many people, but it's not like you don't feel like we're in front of an audience or anything, because the people you release it to, they're going to listen to it, and you don't even know if they're going to listen to it. But if they do, chances are you're not going to hear from them. And if you do, you're only going to hear from, like, you know, a fraction of a percent of them or something. By doing it live in the way that I've been trying, it makes it feel like more like a show. And mm-hmm. I don't know, it's exciting. And I find a different energy comes out of the conversation by having people like watching in real time and interacting in real time. And I get pumped for it. Like when it's Sunday night, I'm like, oh man, like 2 hours and me and Paul are going to do our thing. But yeah.
Wow. Jeez, I didn't think it was going to be that crazy.
I love that.
Yeah, it's fun, but it's also, it's not for everybody. Not everybody wants to sit down on YouTube and listen to something for an hour or 2 hours. And those people can just listen the way they always have because the podcast version comes out. And if you listen to the podcast version, you'd hardly even be able to tell that it was done that way.
So. And I got just a question about your followers. I'm just curious. Like, do you see all the analytics from who's listening, where they're listening from?
Yeah. So I like my podcast, the podcast version, I take my MP3, like my file, I upload it to a certain site and tell it where to put the ad, like where in the episode ads and all that stuff. And then, I can see the analytics for like how many times it's been downloaded, what app they're using, and then some kind of personal things, like I may see if it's a male or female or something. And of course then I'll get a map showing which countries and all that stuff.
Is it a predominantly Canada?
No, it's surprisingly, because I covered just Canadian stuff for the longest time. USA was overwhelming majority. I'd have 70% of my downloads to be from USA.
No shit.
25 would be Canada and the rest would just be spread. Now it's pretty much 50% Canada, 30-ish% America, and then the rest is just like throw a dart at them.
Yeah. Wild.
A lot are displaced Canadians though. Like I hear from people all the time who will say, you know, I'm from Nova Scotia, but I've been teaching English in Korea for the last 5 years, and I love, you know, listening to your show, it gives me a taste of home, you know, that sort of thing.
But
it's people all over. And then of course I get people who listen that don't even realize all my episodes are stories from one specific area. They just think it's a podcast covering like stories, and they're not even realizing they probably couldn't point to Canada on a map. I'm sure I have people like that.
What do you think?
I think it's rapid fire time.
Rapid fire. Oh. Fire, fire, fire.
I don't know which one it is. This one?
No.
Oh, wrong one.
Rapid fire, fire, fire. I mess it up every time.
Every time.
Okay. Jordan. Have you listened to Apology Line?
I don't know that, no.
Ooh.
It's a podcast, I'm guessing.
It's great.
It's something you listen
to. It's weird.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. I'm sure I'd dig it. What's the concept?
So an artist in New York in the 80s opened an answering machine on a line, and people would call in and leave messages. Okay. And there's like a whole thing surrounding these murders and everything. Ooh, that gets okay. divulged.
Yeah, that sounds up my alley. I'll check it out.
Right? It's pretty cool. Biggest inspiration?
Would be Art Bell and Coast to Coast overall. However, when I first started, there was a podcast called Mysterious Topics hosted by two mail carriers from the United States.
Yeah.
They were the first, that was the first podcast where I'm like, yeah, I could do that. Cause they had no background, nothing that made them special or in a position to actually host a podcast. Yet it was fascinating to listen to. And I was like, yeah, if they're doing it, I should do it.
Cool. When are you most productive? I'm guessing
the show's called Nighttime. it's once I call it nighttime, not because the night is dark and spooky, but because once my kids go to sleep and I just sit there with my laptop in silence, that's when I'm doing my work.
Cool. So, yeah. What is your favorite crime documentary?
Not necessarily. Well, I guess it could be a crime. The crime may be vandalism, but there's this documentary called Resurrect Dead.
Yeah.
And it tells the story of, there's these things called people call them the Toynbee tiles. And it's this phenomenon across the U.S. where somebody was making out of, linoleum tiles that are used for flooring. They were making these elaborate patterns with strange messages and using tar to embed them on roads.
Yeah.
And these kind of filmmakers set out initially to research like who was making them and what the messages would mean. But in doing so, they found out that these tiles weren't only in like San Francisco. They were in Mexico. They were all over the U.S. And the documentary gets really close to figuring out who was leaving the tiles and why. And it's an amazing story.
Yeah, I think I've seen it.
Yeah, it's very good. Yeah. If you have anyone who's into cool stories, got to check that out.
Is it like a series or just a one-off documentary?
One-off. It's probably 2 hours long, and it's fascinating. If you're into kind of, you know, like weird stories and kind of how creative mental illness can make you be, maybe you could get it's yeah. a cool story. I dug it.
Apple pie or blueberry pie?
Shoot. You know, and that's a loaded question because I am a big pie guy. People make fun of me. Like if I'm in prison on the 33 drug charges or whatever, if they're going to, if I'm at the firing range, I'm like, you get last meal, your last meal. I'd probably be like, I'd like a coffee with cream and sugar and a slice of, I'd probably want a slice of both, but you know what? I could never choose. There's a time and place for apple. There's a time and place for blueberry.
I like that answer.
Yeah. I guess my choice would be, do I want ice cream on it?
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
Do you have a favorite movie?
I would have to say Blue Velvet by David Lynch. Ooh. Yesterday was his birthday. It's the story of a guy who finds an ear in a box in a field and sets out on a mission to figure out, like,
whose head it belongs to.
Where does ear come from? And he finds himself deep into the dark underbelly of his seemingly perfect town.
Cool. Do you have a favorite book or author?
Overall, I would say maybe the Canadian author William Gibson. He's from Ontario, and he's kind of the one who came up with the cyberpunk genre. A mm-hmm. lot of the motifs and the things he comes up with in his stories, people would know as being in the Matrix, but he did it all first.
Yeah.
And the book that he wrote that's my favorite, it's called Neuromancer. And it's the story of this like kind of hacker who has to take on an artificial intelligence that took over the world mm-hmm. or whatnot. But what's interesting is William Gibson, back in the day before the internet was a thing, he came up with words in terms like in concepts like the Matrix, cyberspace. This all came from, you know, his books. And now people, those words are just synonymous with the internet.
Yeah.
So anyway, he's probably my favorite author, but I don't read a lot. I listen to a lot of audiobooks.
Okay. So, do you know what Mary Fuck Kill is?
Absolutely.
Okay. Dateline, Cold Case Files, Unsolved Mysteries, Mary Fuck Kill.
Oh, shit. I would marry Unsolved Mysteries.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. the reason why is there's so much variety, you'll never get bored with Unsolved Mysteries. And what were the other two?
Dateline and Cold Case Files.
Oh, shit. I would kill Dateline because it's a bit salacious and trashy and it's just a bit corny.
Yeah.
Cold Case Files I would definitely fuck because it's put together so nice.
Yeah.
It is like a hamburger of crime. You get just enough of the story that your mouth starts watering and it's a cold case. So you're left wanting more.
Yeah, absolutely.
But maybe I'd want to marry that. No, I would want to marry the oh, wait.
Would you want to Cold Case Files, right?
Yeah,
you're marrying Unsolved Mysteries.
Yeah, but the thing is, Unsolved Mysteries is a bit wild and you don't know what's going to happen. That'd be a wild night. But I'm going to marry Unsolved Mysteries. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going with that.
Cool. That's it. That's it for rapid fire. where can we find you?
It's not hard. My website's nighttimepodcast.com and that'll link you to all the places. But if you go wherever you listen to a podcast, if you search Nighttime, mine should come up. I'm also on YouTube regularly.
And Instagram.
Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Any of those places other than TikTok. I haven't used that yet.
Yeah.
And I'm cool. not going to. Social media's at times suck.
Well, that's great. Well, thanks for coming by. And
thanks for having me. This has been great.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
See you later.
Hell yeah. Peace.
Well, that's it, everybody. Want to thank you.
That's it, everybody.
Oh, that was great. Yeah. I love Jordan.
Yeah, it was fun. just got as weird as I like it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we could have got a little bit more
weird.
Hey,
man, weird is good.
Yeah. I hope you guys liked it. This one was a little bit of a switch up, but yeah, follow Jordan and all the stuff that he told you before, because I can't remember it. And hit us up at Live Life Intense, at Sounds of Fire. And yeah, shop that preseason sale, baby.
See you next week, folks.
See ya.